Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Welcome back to the French Rugby Podcast with me, Tim Groves, and two men who I imagine you all know pretty well by now. Ex-Scotland international and adopted Frenchman, Johnny Beattie, and former France international, Benjamin Kayser, who every time I turned my TV or radio on this weekend, one of you was there. Good weekend?
Mate, overall, really good weekend. I'm just chuffed every time there's a Six Nations game that delivers everything that we wanted. Even the Italy-England game, which was pretty rubbish to watch. I was just happy to see 30, 40,000 Englishmen who were able, or people, were able to go over to Rome, enjoy the sunshine, 12 degrees, and everybody was drinking rosé, almost taking their shirts off. You know, it was the typical thing.
But sunburnt. Listen,
yeah, but that's everything that we love about Six Nations. It's the traveling, it's the fun, it's the people having big smiles on their face, and then rugby becomes irrelevant. But on top of that, when in Stade de France, you have an absolutely incredible game with two teams that properly went at it, then it just makes it special.
Mate, the stadium, like Benji, I know you were in Cardiff, but I almost felt bad for you. I know Cardiff's an amazing place, but you would have absolutely loved Paris on Saturday. It was just amazing. The pyrotechnics and the vibe in the stadium and the noise and the excitement all the way through the game, that I'm sure we'll talk about. And then it's the after
you
bit
know,
as well.
You know, if you're trying to make us feel better, you're bluntly
making you worse.
You know that, right?
But we're going to end up in the same place eventually. But and it's what you talked about. It's the little bits that you forget, like the bits about the weekends away in Six Nations rugby. And again, everyone having beers at the beer stand outside the stadium. And then the best bit for me was actually coming back to the hotel and seeing Irish boys that had 12 pints of Guinness, trying to talk French and talk kick strategy with Irish boys that had 3 bottles of wine and were trying to talk English. You know, like just that kind of stuff that you forget and you miss. Crowds back in, making the experience proper again, and then being able to debrief and exchange and the sort of cross-border stuff that we all love and we've all missed for 2-3 years. An amazing weekend. Really lucky to have been there again. Was really lucky to have been there in the autumn for the All Blacks game. And this one again was up there.
And apart from being very jealous of Johnny, Benji, what did you make of the game? Because France are the only team left with Grand Slam hope still alive. What impressed you most?
It's not like I can't say that what impressed me the most was Ireland. But definitely to have...
That'd be a surprise.
Accepted. Yeah, we'll take that.
But to be honest, I actually didn't think Ireland could play that well. No. They did really impress me. And what I'm trying to say is that I think what I was the most impressed by is France had to take it a whole different level that I thought that they reached already in November against New Zealand. I actually thought it was a harder game than New Zealand game. What we were faced on against on Saturday. So it's basically to give credit where it's due. We had a fantastic game because there was two teams that were absolutely incredible. What makes me even happier is that you think when they've reached the top, I mean, if you look, you bring it back 2 years, winning England at home in February 2020 was already the Mount Everest for us, right? France were back and they were smoking the finalists of the last World Cup and they were doing really well. And you're thinking they've peaked. That's all they can do. And they just gradually get better and better and better. And this one, for me, really feels like a step ahead. It feels like they were seriously challenged, that they could have lost it, that there were some incredible moments. They started off with an absolute bang, you know, and that's what really sort of makes me think that obviously they need the crowd, but they can swallow all that pressure. Antoine Dupont was average against Italy. He was outstanding for the first 20 minutes against Ireland. He was absolutely all over the place. You know, to give you an example, he plays that first line out really quick, leads by example, blah, 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 scores the first try a couple of seconds later. So I was hugely impressed by the tactics. Six forwards on the bench proved to be key. I was hugely impressed by the opposition. I thought they were absolutely mind-blowingly quick, better than anybody we faced in the last years. And when you say that you faced Australia and New Zealand and England, it's a big statement. And I was just really, really, really impressed by how France dug deep. Still, I feel it was an all-around best performance we've seen in 11 years. Let's just put it that way. So that's how impressed I was.
Well, you mentioned the opposition, Benji, and how impressed you were with them. And it's about time we got some balance on. Let's get an Irish perspective on the game. Former Ireland hooker and ex-Grenoble coach Bernard Jackman joins us. How are you?
Hey, everybody. Thanks for having me on.
We just heard Benji's viewpoint. He was impressed with Ireland. What did you make of the game?
I thought we showed a lot of character, a lot of spirit, good fitness, because we were completely dominated, to be honest. I mean, if Ireland had won that match, it would have been one of the greatest mysteries of all time. If you look at physical dominance, I thought France were incredibly impressive. But Ireland, when they got that opportunity to kick to the corner, they mauled over once well. Gibson Park took his try well, and we got a lucky break for the Mack Hansen try, and Carberry kicked well. So we stayed in the game. France's discipline is probably the one area that they need to improve on. I know they're working with Jerome Garces. They do give up penalties, sometimes quite needlessly. Now, they are a team that go after you at the breakdown, so that's always a risk. But yeah, for us to get a losing bonus point, I think is a really good result for us. And now we got to hope that France slip up. But I think the Irish team are on a good trajectory. We probably lack a bench, to be honest. I think that, you know, France were able to change the whole front five by the 55th minute. We still had Tadhg Furlong and Andrew Porter on in the 72nd minute, and they're out on their feet, but we don't have the same level of replacements that France have, and that's the concern for us. And 18 months out from a World Cup, I think Farr is going to have to decide what he's going to do in terms of his bench, because we have guys like Conor Murray, Keane Healy, Peter Mahoney, who are really good players, but, you know, they're more guys to come on and protect the lead rather than to go chase a game. And I think that's maybe something we learned pretty clearly against France.
Last week in our preview with Simon Zeebo, we were saying, look, this Irish side really, ball in hand, and again, Wales were completely different opposition, but ball in hand, 1-15 looked very, very attractive. Then you come into a completely different type of defence. France played with a blitz, put them under real pressure, forced them to make mistakes, coughed up ball, slowed that ball down, and Ireland just couldn't really cope. So is it just a defence that Ireland hadn't come up against before, the type of defence, or was it just pure physicality or combination?
Yeah, look, I think the problem for us is we haven't been exposed to that. New Zealand have got more line speed than they had before, but they're not a blitz defence. Argentina were out on their feet when we played them in November. Wales had a poor performance against us. They weren't as physical as they normally are. So we've had, you know, we had the best ruck speed going into that game, and we have big ball carriers. I mean, it's the most athletic Irish team we've ever had. Like, Keller, Furlong, Porter, Doris, Conan, you know, it's not a small team, but against France, we got absolutely smashed. Like, Ireland have a good balance between playing front door and back door, and that's been a big feature of how our attacks developed, but you can't always play back door. Sometimes you have to go to the line, and when we went to the line, I think we got hit with such ferocity, the ball became slow, and then your next option to go out the back isn't as easy, and then you got to go front door again, and that's it. And I just think France have found, you know, a really good balance between really physical, aggressive players who want to defend, and that's Sean Edwards' effect, and obviously that's the identity, and that's the team spirit. But players now seem to want to defend harder for France than they maybe did in the past. And that's I'm not saying they didn't do in the past, but there's a collective mindset there around defending. And like people say, I did a show tonight, and they said, oh, we learn a lot from that. But like, what will we really learn? Like, you know, a big, powerful athlete who's bigger and more powerful than you is always going to be hard to overcome. You know, you can't run away from a fight in a Six Nations or a Champions Cup run-in. You have to be able to match, go to the wall as such, and that's the challenge for us. And I think you know, it's going to take us a while to figure out a plan.
During the week, there was two big calls for me. One on the Irish side was that unfortunately Johnny Sexton was out for injury and Joe Carberry was in there. For me, it was the best news ever for France, right? Yeah. And in Ireland, or in the UK at least, I was seeing a lot of newspapers saying, finally, Carberry is going to be forced to have his big shot, right? So I really don't know where that conversation was coming from. But I think in a game that's going to be so tight, so narrow, adapting on the day to that really aggressive defense, blitz defense, the probably the best guy you would want to have on the pitch would have been Johnny Sexton. On the other side, unfortunately, we lost Jonathan Danti, and then Moe Fana comes in. Bloody hell, was he good?
It's a really good point, Benjamin. I thought we had a better chance of winning with Sexton, and so did the bookies. I mean, it went from handicap of -2 to -5 as soon as he was out. But I do think we're never going to replace Johnny Sexton, because his influence on the team is far greater than the amount of times he touches the ball. And that kind of player is so rare to get. So I thought Carberry did really well. Like, we're delighted with Carberry because he's always been a talented player but hasn't had the chance to play in the really big games. So that's a positive. That looks like he's clearly #2. But the challenge is to have, you know, more people take ownership. Like, for example, Intermac, he's a gifted player, but Antoine Dupont takes a lot of the game management as is traditional in France. So we have Gibson Park, who's a tempo type 9. He plays fast, so he relies on his 10 to control things. And I know, speaking to some of the players, I was lucky enough to play with Johnny, but players speaking who play with him now say he sees the game 2 steps ahead of everybody else, and he makes people get in position. So the problem for us is that, you know, we're locked and loaded now in World Cup cycle, 18 months to France. We may run into France in a World Cup, all going well. And we're going to be very reliant on Conor Murray, Johnny Sexton, Keane Healy, Peter Mahoney. And that's going to be 18 months further down the road. Whereas I think you guys going to Australia last year without all your frontliners allowed you guys find, you know, Jaminet and you know, Villiers. And some more talent, Rockies obviously come through. So I think your strength and depth is, like, you've known Teddy Thomas, you've known Vakatara, you know Danti, you know, you've known Jalibert, and you're still in pretty good shape. I mean, for me, I think Marchand is world-class, and you're taking Marchand off of 55 minutes to bring on, you know, Mouvaka, who's pretty good as well. And, like, you've got Bougerie, and sorry for my pronunciation, but I like the La Rochelle hooker. You probably know 5 hookers playing the top 14, Benjamin, who could play international rugby. And
Camille Shah is not even in there.
Yeah, Camille Shah, exactly. So it's pretty mind-boggling what you've got.
Julien Marchand's all right. He's all right. The boys laugh because I know his family quite well, and okay. I rate him highly.
Yeah.
Exactly the type of hooker that I like, because I think he's very reliable. He's very good on the basics. He's made for international rugby.
Yeah.
He hardly makes a mistake. He's deadly over the ball. He's very good scrum, line out, the overall activity. He's got that right balance of power, but he's got a good engine on him. And it's funny how you mentioned Mouvaka, yes, but Mouvaka will always scare me. I think somewhere, somehow, he might do something incredible, but he might cock it up too.
Yeah.
Whereas Julien Marchand, I think, is his main asset is that he's super, super reliable, which made him captain of Toulouse when he was 22. So, yeah, I sort of rate him, sort of.
And on the coaching side of things, Bernard, obviously you were a coach in France. You mentioned Sean Edwards earlier on. Just give us an insight into the job you think he's done.
Yeah, look, he's brilliant. So when I went to so Gatland was my first ever coach in professional rugby in Connacht, and he told me to go to the Dragons. It was a good project. Now, he lied to me, but I got to spend some time in Welsh camp trying to learn. And Sean Edwards is phenomenal, and he keeps it so simple. I know good systems should be simple, but it's his ability to get players to play for him. I saw players in Wales who to miss a tackle for Sean, you know, put the fear of God into him. And he's not just always, you know, hard man, push. He's got a softer side. He's able to build relationships. And I watched some of the stuff from, you know, he's trying to speak French as much as he can. But I think he was a brilliant appointment. But also, my understanding of it is that when he was approached about the job, and he obviously knows France very well, having coached Wales for so long, he insisted that there was no point getting him unless they brought in a kicking coach, Flock Killier. And he's like, well, look, I can put the best defensive system in the world, but if you kick really poorly all the time, no defense is going to be able to withhold that. So himself and Flock Killier, you know, built their kicking strategy. And obviously, you know, I think both are much, much improved. Obviously, I think they're fitter than ever they were. And then you've got, you know, Fabian, who's obviously very intelligent. And then you've got Raphael at the top and Lauren Abik. Like, it's a very nice staff, you know what I mean? And from my opinion always was that, I know they paid Gino this big money, but good money, but it didn't seem to, the most money was to be made in the top 14 or coach somewhere else. It was kind of federation coaches doing the national team, whereas now I think you've got guys who've been at the top level and they complement each other, you know, really well. But yeah, Sean has them revved up, and it's very similar to what they did in Wales. But you know, his big focus is slowing the ball down with two man tackles. But what he's doing with France that he couldn't do with Wales is like really being aggressive on the counter look, and that's probably because, you know, it's not even the big guys. Villiers can get it started, and once someone gets a little bit of go forward, they just flood that breakdown and it becomes a nightmare.
I saw a really nice piece in French media this morning. Fabien Galthié was just saying that when they were handing out the jerseys on Friday, Gabin Villiers stood up in front of everyone and said, lads, this weekend it's going to be absolute war and I'm going to be at the front. And he absolutely, like, freak show for the size of him, what mad. He gets through. And again, from being turned away at Rouen as a scrum half, being told, mate, you can't pat, you can't catch, you can't kick. Your heels click together when you run. Go and do something else. Like, to where he is now, it's insane. I wanted to ask you a little bit more about Fabian, because obviously you've been a head coach in the top 14. You've coached against Fabian when he was at Montpellier, when he was there coaching me. You coached against his blitz defense as well when we were at Montpellier. We played the 9-10 defense. What kind of job? You mentioned his staff there, but you mentioned intelligent coaching against him. What is it that you've seen, and what is it that you enjoy about Fabian Galthié as a head coach, the way he sets up his teams and the bloke?
My understanding of it is that he found coaching club players very frustrating. He struggles to see why people can't see what he saw when he played. And I think now he's got a gifted group who can do what, you know, he could do. And he's obviously a phenomenal player. I know that Joe Schmidt, who's a real like technician, you know, would have copied or used a lot of Fabian's strike plays and, you know, saw him as a very... to be honest, in Ireland, we've seen him as always being the most... technically gifted French coach. I also think tactically as well. I think the problem was maybe personality, in terms of being able to build relationships with players, being able to deal with that week in, week out. But I do think now, you know, going into a block of Six Nations, November, that's great, because he can just really focus on building things. And I said, now he has a group of players who can do what he wants and maybe more, you know. So, but I always found him a real, like, so... Even when we were both coaching, head coaching in Grenoble, and he was in Montpellier, we both did a bit of TV work. After a top 14 match, it was difficult to you know, really get on well with an opposition coach or both get on a bus or whatever. But I used to get to meet him at Six Nations games or you know, in Europe, and he'd have 4 hours in the press box, or you'd maybe sharing a cab back. And, you know, he knows the game inside out. I'm glad to see him, because obviously Montpellier ended badly, then Toulon ended badly, and, you know, you'd wonder, was he going to get back into it? But he seems to have got the perfect job with the right group of players, with the right target of being a World Cup, you know.
While we're on your time at Grenoble, you were there 5 or 6 years. So how did that move come about?
So I wanted to play in France, but it wasn't good enough. So I said when I retired, I'd try and get a coaching job there. And a guy I played with in Connacht was the captain in Grenoble. We were in the second division. And we actually lost. We lost a home barrage. So we finished second in Pro D2. Or I wasn't there this stage, but they finished second in Pro D2 and lost to Bordeaux, who finished fifth in Stade Lidiger in Grenoble. So you can imagine the club, obviously, having finished second, probably thought, you know, we've a great chance of going up. And to lose at home in the semi-final was a big blow. So the coach, Fabrice Landreau, another hooker, was the director sportif. He kind of spent his budget for the following year, but he realised... It was shit. It's going to be hard to go back to the well with the same staff. So he said, I'd love to bring in someone to do some defense consulting. So we basically did a deal that I'd go for 6 weeks in preseason. The preseasons in France are pretty short compared to obviously what we would have been used to, Johnny, in Ireland or Scotland or England. And so I went for 6 weeks. We shook hands at the end of that 6 weeks that if Grenoble got promoted, I'd go back full time the following year. So I came back to Ireland, was doing some media, was doing some coaching here, and he brought me over then full-time the following year. I ended up staying for 5 years. It was great. But yeah, we had a problem with money in the end. And our benefactor, Serge Kampf, passed away. The guy who owns the Jetty and Cap Gemini. And there was a bit of a run on the bank, and we had to start selling. We sold Paul Willems actually to Montpellier to try and pay the bills. So I wouldn't mind having kept him. He's a pretty good player.
Just give us a picture of what coaching in France was like then.
It's very different if you're with a club who are playing for the Manchan to stay up. We were sending players on a bus, like, who should never play in top 14, because we need to get our GIF caught up. And like, I wasn't head coach the first 2 years, 3 years, but when I became head coach on a Monday, he'd have to go to the president with the team and he'd look at the number of GIF and he'd be like, no. That was interesting for me because, you know, you always think as a coach, you pick your best team every week. It wasn't really the case. Obviously, your target matches, home games are crucial. You try and pick up 3 or 4 away from home. But it was brilliant. I mean, like, we had a lot of guys who played Pro D2 for 5, 6, 7 years. And for them to play Toulouse, they dreamed about that. So, like, emotionally, they were at a different level. And then the longer you stay in top 14, the better you have to be technically and tactically, because that emotion wears off. So, but I loved it. I mean, it's a phenomenal league. And some good stories. Fabrice Landreau was a good character as well. And I didn't understand half the things he was doing, but they worked for 4 years and he kept us up, which is great. You know?
Did he do Benny B? Did he do his song?
Home win. Every home win he did the Benny B.
Fabrice Landreau is a Stade Français legend. He was a Grenoble with the Mammouth, the pack of the Mammouth in the 1990s, where they were absolutely massacring everybody. Just pure size. And then he came up to Stade Français and stuff and did really well, got into the French team, retired from Stade Français, picked up the academy. And I was a 15-year-old, fat and very, very pale hooker at the time. So, but he kind of liked me. So he got me all the way to the first team and stuff. So I've got a close relationship with him. But he's renowned for his song of Benny B, which is like a French rap or whatever. But he does it shirt off in the bus. Benny B. Like, be mon nom, what's it been to be? Whatever, he just does it, and he's a legend.
Brilliant, absolutely, but he's a legend. But great story about him. So he was brilliant at targeting games, and like half the fun was on a Monday morning. He'd be looking at all the other results, and then he'd be looking at the calendar, and he was saying, right, Brive are going to go to Racing. They'll get 1 point there. Perpignan are going here, and so basically it all worked out. So we had 4 games to go, and he basically worked out that we were safe. Anyway, so he sent a couple of our foreigners back to New Zealand, so they get an extra 3 weeks holidays. We had a couple of guys who needed operations. He sent them to get operations, right? So we were left with basically just, you know, a very young team, and some guys that we weren't keeping the following year, so they were totally unmotivated. Results went against us, right? So we knew we weren't going to get anything, but other teams won games that they weren't supposed to. So it came down to the very last day of the season. We were going to Toulouse away, and Perpignan were going to Clermont, right? Now, Perpignan had won the top 14 maybe 2 years before that, so Perpignan were good. They just had a really bad year. If Perpignan won and we got nothing, we were relegated, right? So anyway, it was too late. We'd already picked the team of Espoirs, and we were on the bus to Toulouse from Grenoble. And we used to stop in Montpellier at the same hotel every time we were going that way. And next thing, the bus goes off down towards the estuary, or it's famous for oysters, right? So anyway, we're driving down this little road, and I said to Fabrice, where are we going? He goes, oh, repas special, right? So it's like a special meal. So we go into this little village. There's no hotel. There's no restaurant. And next thing, these fishing boats are coming in, and Fabrice is waving because he knows everybody, right? And they start giving, like, oysters, right? So the lads are smashing oysters, and there's no carbs, there's no rice, there's no pasta. And we're playing Toulouse, like, that evening, right? So I said to Fabrice, there's no carbohydrates. He goes, to our reason, right? So he goes off. The next thing, I see him come back with white wine, right? And I was like,
some carbs in that.
The souk, whatever. So the lads are having their wine and oysters. Within a half an hour, everyone's down the back of the bus. So we go to Toulouse, and we're getting spanked. At halftime, it's 40 points. And next thing, Perpignan are winning in Clermont. I'm not sure if you were there, Benjamin.
I played that game.
Our match was happening on the pitch, and all the coaches are watching the game in Clermont on an iPad. Oh, man, it's crazy. But look, it was fun.
Mate, I remember that game because there's like a penalty at the end.
Yes.
If we go to touch to try to go for bonus point or something, whatever, and if we lose the touch, whatever, they have one more shot. And Guillaume Girardot, who was playing with us in the French team with Morgan Parra at the time, he's like, he's begging him. Like, I've never seen anything like it. He's like, Morgan, please don't take the shots. Please don't. Yeah. Because if we take it, there's like a minute and a half, they get done, right? And he's like, please, I'm begging you. He is crying on the pitch. kick it to touch, kick it to touch, please. And at the end, they had a fallout and stuff. But Morgan's like, mate, it's not about you. It's not about Perpignan. I'm just about scoring more points. Don't want to take any risk. Even we would have still been qualified.
Yeah.
But whatever, you still want to win at home, right? There's not even a question. And I remember the tension was sky high, and I didn't know that it was you guys on the other side.
Yeah, we were the other side. And so he was going, look, they won't win in Clermont. And we were like, but Clermont have nothing really to play for. And Perpignan, they were actually good. But yeah, look at
saving the boys on the oysters and wine in the pre-match meal, mate. That's what you were saving. I was going to ask you as well, was not something stirred up at Grenoble when you're coach? Did you not ban them from desserts for a bit as well? And that caused absolute uproar as well.
That was exaggerated. So so basically what happened was we went up to Abdouez for training camp because it's very hot in Grenoble in the summer. So we used to try and go up to Abdouez to get a little bit of fresh air and train up there. Basically, our body fat. So this was our fourth year in top 14. So everybody's getting really comfortable. So some of the boys came back. Now, I was always in Fat Club myself, so I'm not saying I was a saint, but I used to get out of Fat Club at some stage. So the boys came back, body comp, ridiculously bad. The team doctor over there in Grenoble anyway had a load of power. Like, he was really powerful, nearly like a head, nearly more powerful than the head of S&C, more powerful than the head of the head physio. Anyway, next thing I saw, we'd have like really nice desserts at dinner at night, and that's no problem. But then the ones that were left over would come out in the morning with breakfast, right? Okay. And then, so basically some of the boys would be having their cafe and like whatever, like little tart. And the desserts in France are beautiful. But they wouldn't have any like protein. And this is pre-season or whatever. So then at lunchtime, there was more desserts, right? So I went to the doctor, said, look at what's going on. He's all, they're training so hard. We need to, for their mind, for the test, right? And I was like, yeah, but like half these lads are in Fat Club, right? So we're getting them up at 6 o'clock in the morning to try and get them the extra cardio, and then they're having like chocolate cakes for breakfast, lunch, or dinner. So he went to some of the players. Arno Heggie, you're probably betting against him.
He's a legend.
So Arno wasn't happy about this, the coach getting involved in the nutrition and stuff. And so eventually we agreed that we just have dessert and ice. Anyway, it got to Ruby Rama or someone like that. And I was trying to ban desserts, which I like dessert myself. You know what I mean? I wasn't going to take.
We all love a dessert.
it was just funny.
Right, going back to the rugby quickly. If I was playing against France and I was Scotland next game, I would refuse the physical confrontation. I would just kick everything, which is really dull. But Scotland aren't going to be able to match that, I don't think. So how do you think other teams are going to play against France and try and take them on? Who are you now tipping to win the championship, if not Grand Slam? There's only one team that can do it. And what did you make of the Irish choice to go for points and not go for the corner?
Okay, yeah. So I'll go backwards. So I think we should have kicked to the corner. I think, ironically, we actually had, obviously we'd scored from a maul, even though we weren't as big and powerful as, but we had a very good technically constructed maul. And I thought France at that stage, their impact, their players off the bench hadn't really found a rhythm in the game, even though they made a lot of changes and we were on top. And I also thought that, I think kicking it gave them a minute under the post just to get a little bit of air. They obviously kicked it long. We got into a kick tennis battle and eventually Ireland kicked it out on the... and they won that kick tennis and then they got going. I mean, at the end, I thought the bench for France, the last 7 or 8 minutes, were really good and powerful. And I thought Jaminet, that was a try. I mean, if the referee doesn't say it's not a try, I think the TMO gives it. I think if Sexton's there, we kick to the corner. And I'm not saying we would have scored, but I just thought that was the right thing to do. I think France will win it now. I'm fascinated to see, though, how they will deal with going away from home. But they seem to be relishing these milestones, these opportunities, the All Blacks. They seem to really build up the Ireland game. I think they saw that as being a key game. So I do think France are good enough to go and win it now. How would I play against them? Yeah, I agree you need to kick a lot. I think the problem is that you can't just play a 1-3-3-1 shape and expect to do what you do all the time. So I think if you are going to keep the ball in hand, you have to play closer to the ruck. So the problem is, if you look at what France did, and I'll send you a clip, so from the scrum penalty in the 37 minute when they got advantage, they played this pattern where all the forwards got around the ball and they just went like at a second defender, punching through. And eventually Dupont makes a little half break and eventually Bundiaki strips it. But they did that three times in the game. They did it against New Zealand. And it's like, right, we're going to take you on. Okay. Now, I know Ireland or Scotland aren't equipped to do that to a certain same extent. But if you have a nine who can snipe and can put people into space or just on the gain line, very close to that first and second defender, no matter how big France are, it's very difficult. They don't get line speed. And I think then you just start to compact them a little bit. But I think everybody plays that long pass off nine to the second forward with a tip on and in. And by the time he gets it, he can't even put footwork on.
Smashed,
yeah. So I wouldn't be doing that against them.
Just one quick one before we let you go, Bernard. You mentioned at the start, there is every chance that these two will meet again in a World Cup quarterfinal. And we know Ireland's history in them.
Yeah.
You mentioned it's difficult to learn things when there is a physicality difference. Andy Farrell's going to have to learn things from it. Is there a sense of trepidation that you might meet them?
Absolutely. I think, because I think they're on track to be, for me, the top three in the world by then. You know, South Africa, you'd imagine, will come back strong. Obviously have a very predictable game plan to do really well. New Zealand, you know, in a year's time, they should be in good shape. But I think France are shaping up really well. The problem is the players will know how powerful France were. They'll have experienced. I mean, like some of the cleanouts, the carries in contact, the meters after contact were scarily good. It's very difficult to con a team that, you know, doing an extra weight session or a little bit more of a breakdown technique is going to make any difference. There's a clean out by Penno and Mofana on Bundy Aki. He just goes he just goes flying. You know what I mean? There's a clean out on Josh van der Fleer, I think, by Aldridge in that series. Like, okay, it's illegal, but like it doesn't matter. Once you're going forward, like France are going forward, the referee will give you the benefit of the doubt. And I'm interested actually. The role that Jerome Garces has Benjamin in that coaching setup, like, is he there just to referee training, or is he there to build a relationship with the referee that's coming up that week? You know, it seems, I know that Montpellier brought in an ex referee as defense coach. I wouldn't be giving referees coaching jobs now, but what's his role there?
I think you're a clever bugger, because definitely a big role for him, and you know how important it is before a game, especially international game, a big role for him is to sneak in information into the refs before the game.
Yeah.
I mean, I think Joe Schmidt is worldly renowned for the amount of information he used to send to refs before a game. And it was almost too much to the point where they're like, mate, we only have a week to look at them. Keep your clips for you. It's just simply too much, right? So you're completely right. He's there for that. But it's also feeding information, which is fair, which is true. And with the relevant amount of expertise and pointers that make it digestible for refs, right? To you can sum it up in a way that we will actually speak to them. Secondly, he definitely works very much a bit like what Richard McCaw used to do. What's the rule? How can I get around it?
Yeah.
Type of mindset. But thirdly, which is the main reason why France is doing so well, is that I think you experienced Grenoble, but I was in the French team for 10 years. I thought I dropped one or two levels of intensity during the weeks whenever we would come up for the French team. Fabien Galthié has transformed this, and he called this the high intensity workouts, whatever. They do basically a full on opposition for 25 to 30 minutes every week. And it's usually on the Wednesday. It's a full tilt apart from don't kill yourself. You know, that the famous 90% rugby, which intensity, which doesn't really exist, right? It's either 100 or 50. And they do that with a ref. So they were full tilt, nonstop, repeating those efforts of Damien Penaud. Let me tell you, if he does a clean where he melted somebody, that means he must have tripped over something, or he was really, really scared of being dropped if he didn't do it, because it's definitely not something that he likes. So his role is absolutely huge. Figuring out ways around the rule with players, especially around rucks and around the forwards play, feeding information to the refs before the game, and pops potentially getting feedback after the game. Yes, getting their points across, because you know that the winners sort of dictate the way that the games are refed 100%. And then there's also a big element of those Wednesday high intensity sessions that he refs.
There we go. Thanks ever so much for coming on and sharing your insight, Bernard. And mutual love there. Benji said before he came on, he was impressed by Ireland. Fair to say you were impressed by France.
No, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. No, and look, guys, thanks for having me on. I listened to this podcast and I really enjoy your expertise, analysis and fun.
Thanks a lot, mate.
Thanks for joining us, Bernard.
Okay, thank you, guys.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Bernard pretty much nailed everything in his coaching analysis there. But anything to add, guys?
The only thing I can add is that when he says he doesn't want to go back into coaching, he's bluntly lying to us, mate.
He's made bluffing.
He's made for it. He absolutely adores it. You could tell he's got a big smile on his face when it's about having a look at who did what and how and understanding things around it. No, I think he's got a really great rugby brain with a lot of expertise and love for the game. But what I adore is that when he asks questions about France, is because we're basically setting the trend, which is the first in our history, pretty much. We used to be, you know, the French flair and all that. They were not setting the trend. They were just making sparkles from time to time. But now we're clearly leading the way in terms of the way that rugby is played at the moment. So this is extraordinary news.
Very cool. I also get the feeling that once his kids are like 15, 16, they'll be off to boarding school and he'll be back. he can tell he loves it.
Right, so a very quick chat about the other games at the weekend then.
We have to.
Scotland, what happened? Another false dawn?
Just not accurate and disciplined enough when we needed to be, didn't control it well enough. Again, the crazy thing is, the past 2 years have been no crowds, right? Scotland get an emotional roller coaster. They beat England in a smash and grab. Then you go down to Principality. You haven't won there since 2002. And Scotland now have a squad that I feel is capable of beating everyone, but that doesn't necessarily mean they're going to beat everyone every time. And so they were in the game. They've lost by one score and they just didn't control the game at moments that they needed to. It was hugely physical. Like, I think Wales did really well to reduce their game plan and make it really tough for Scotland. And that was it. Key clean outs at a few key moments and the game goes the other way. Just not quite disciplined enough. Again, Finn's yellow card was a sort of final nail in the coffin, but just not quite tight enough. Not quite the level of execution that you need and you lose the game. I don't know, you were there live, Benji. What did it to you? Obviously, it's different for me. It's very, very sore as a neutral. How did you see it?
I was there commenting for French TV. It was definitely not the same level as France-Ireland in terms of intensity and skill and all that. But I really did think that it was a wasted opportunity for Scotland. The game was there for the taking. Both teams doing well, but committing too many errors. I think the only thing you can underline is the resilience of Wales, who just never gave up and who were hanging around by a thread and were clearly dominated, especially in the first half, who just kept on coming back and coming back. And in terms of leading by example, unfortunately, Finn made a couple of mistakes and got a yellow. And Dan Biggar played 40 minutes on one leg, kicked the winning drop goal and led in a beautiful, beautiful, in very, very impressive way. So
on his 100th as well.
100th test, captain. Full stadium at Millennium, which hasn't been, you know, since forever in Wales, because they've been pretty strict with the whole COVID thing. For a Welsh side that obviously is under a huge amount of pressure after getting pumped by Ireland and some bad results in November, I was just really impressed by how much they wanted it, how much he wanted it, and what he delivered. And I just thought the big players of Wales stood up, the big players of Scotland didn't.
Next, let's move on.
And what of Italy, England? Did we learn much about either side?
The only thing that you can speak about, or the only good news about this, is that people got a good weekend in Rome. The game was average. England were average. Italy had nothing to offer. In the second half, there were bits of it that I was just actually a little bit embarrassed about.
Really?
The second half, some bits were terrible. You're already down by 30 points and you're still kicking in the corner and still kicking.
That's the bit.
Up. There's nothing.
For me.
There's nothing. It's not even they're getting intercepted or, you know, a flick pass that pops on the floor and it gets picked up or something. There was nothing in the second half. And even England didn't really play well in the second half. So nothing to offer.
The sad bit for me was that Italy managed, I think it was 17 visits to England's 22, and they still didn't come away with the points. They just don't have that cutting edge yet. I mean, that being said, their under-20s beat England about the weekend, 6-0. Their under-20s smash Scotland. So like there's kids coming through, and obviously in this test team, none of them have got caps. They're completely inexperienced. It's so youthful, but that was it. 17 visits, take something, bring something to the game. They scrapped, they tried to grind it out. But then again, you hit the nail on the head. The bit that I almost turned off the TV was, I think England had maybe 50, 60 minutes, an attacking maul that sort of comes to nothing around about the halfway or 40 meter line for Italy, and they box kick. And I was just like, just come on, something different, spectacle, a change in mindset, because you've got the players, you've got the caliber, but it's like they're so set in their ways I understand there's different ways of winning games, but you just want to see them spark and fire and be creative and have fun. And I think that's what you get from the French side at the minute, is you see how much fun they're having, what it means to them, what it means to the public. England right now is, they're winning games. Eddie Jones still has the highest win percentage of any English coach, but they just look bored. And I think people are bored watching them, which isn't great.
But if there's one last thing on a positive for Italy, is to say that a long time ago, there's a mate of mine who told me that the Italian under-21s were doing well. There was a strong generation that just got chucked, and they were only 20, not even 21. They were still be able to play for the under-21s. They got chucked in the first team and went to New Zealand and got pumped, but then stuck with the friend in that national side. And those boys are Martin Castrogiovanni, Sergio Parisse, Gonzalo Canale, and the Bergamasco, probably Mirko Bergamasco. Mauro was already playing for the national side. So if they have under-20s that are good, mate, get them on that bus. Like, not in 2 years.
No.
Now. Because they won't do anything.
And yeah. Get them in.
But yeah, get them in now, and at least they'll get some experience. And you can get excited about it. I want to see a 19-year-old Italian side. And if they get pumped, they get pumped. I'll be the first one cheering on for them, because these boys are getting better by the minute.
Well, we've chatted about the games. So should we have a quick look at how you're doing in the Guinness Match Point Predictor? Do you know?
No.
I don't know. I must have done really well in the first round. Second round, I was cheering on for Scotland, so I must have buckled down for that one. But the rest I did good.
Second round, not so good, Benji. Johnny overtook you this week.
Yeah. But he always does his predictions after me, though, right?
Well, I do them so before the game. All it just has to be before the game. It doesn't matter if they're after you. It's like I'm doing them after the final whistle and cheating.
Johnny, you are third in the Guinness Legends League.
Well done.
I'll take it.
Well, there's no Six Nations games this weekend, but that doesn't mean there's no chances to win prizes. There is a Guinness Sports Quiz on the Matchpoint app this Thursday. No doubt you'll both be taking part.
Yes.
I'm in.
The format is simple. It's like a pub quiz. You've got 10 questions to answer. You're marked on getting the question right, how quickly you do it. Score more than 200 out of 300 points to beat the quiz and bag yourself a free pint of the black stuff.
Free black stuff, I'm in.
Right. Let's do a trial run. Three questions. Which player has scored the most tries in this year's Guinness Six Nations?
Well, Gabavilia. It has to be him. He scored three the first one.
I was going to give you multiple choice options, but you're bang on. There you go. You're already winning. You'll both know this one. When was the last time France won the Six Nations?
Won the Six Nations in 2010. It was a grand slam. I got extra points. Extra points.
Hey, make them harder, Tim. Come on.
Which player holds the all-time Six Nations point scoring record?
Dimitri Yashvili.
It's not a Frenchman, Benji. It's not a Frenchman. Sorry.
Johnny.
O'Gara. Nearly.
O'Gara. Well done, Johnny.
There you go.
Do you know how many points?
I'm going to say between 500 and 600.
557.
Well done.
Bonus point. When are France and Mexico going to win the Six Nations?
Oh, hello.
Oh,
2022.
Johnny?
They've got it in them. I think they've got it in them this year, mate. I think so.
Hard to argue with that. To take part yourself, just fire up the free Matchpoint app on Thursday of this week and head to the Guinness Sports Quiz. And in the meantime, there were more than 20,000 pints won last week. For anyone who has a free pint to claim, head into the Pint Predictor, go to prizes, and you'll be able to find more than 3,500 pubs where you can claim your free pint of Guinness.
Beautiful.
Right. It's about time we did our meter moment of the week, isn't it? So do you want to go first, Benji?
Yeah, I'll go first, because I'm sure Johnny, and completely rightfully, will pick out some incredible moment between France and Ireland, most probably in the French side, and I think you will be totally right. I just want to give a big old shout out to Dan Bigger. I thought he did incredibly well. So my meter moment would be his last, especially his second half against Scotland, where he was absolutely on one leg. And he took a couple of big hits just before halftime, where he stayed on the floor, and then he got backed up and he limped his way back in. And there was clearly absolutely no chance he was going to come off the pitch. And he scored the winning drop goal with a penalty advantage. And everybody in the stadium's like, why did you kick it? You know, having a go at him and stuff. In the end, it proved to be key. And he was incredible. I loved the moment. Now, there you go. That's my actual moment to sum up his whole thing. Before he comes off, there's a penalty for Wales. And he's about to kick it to touch. And he sprints. Well, he limps to the touch. He's like, can I kick it to touch and then get subbed off? He asked before, because he wanted to make sure that he could have the most reach with his boot before, I think it was Callum Sheedy who came on, the Bristol guy. And so that's, you know, leading to the absolute last glimpse of moment that he could. And he found a beautiful touch, chucked the ball, fell on a chair. And I was really, really impressed by him. There was a beautiful interview with him by the end. He got a cheer by the whole crowd. And I think he was pretty chuffed. I didn't even connect that he was his 100th calf, but that's bloody hell. That's a huge achievement. So my muted moment would have been when he decided to kick the touch before he got subbed. But overall, his second half, where he showed incredible resilience and grit, just a big set of nuts, really. And I was really impressed.
Benji, you've got me. I was going to go for a big defensive performance, the blitz defense, Gabin Villiers announcing during the week, it's going to be freaking war and I'm going to bring it. I'm going to be the instigator. Because it was a phenomenal team performance by France. They're now the only team unbeaten and still tilting at a Grand Slam. But my meter moment of the week was also Dan Biggar. So you've got me. I thought the exact same as you. The way they got humbled as well in Ireland the week before, they needed an emotional change as did Scotland to continue and potentially win that game. But the way he led on his 100th, the way he kicked, a huge day for him and his team. They found a way to grind it out back in Cardiff at the Principality, which is such a hard place to go. But 100 test matches just in itself is phenomenal. But the way he led, the way he kicked, and then also the moment for me that I actually really enjoyed was him with one of his kids on the pitch after the game. I thought that must have been very cool to have done that for your country, drag them back, win the game, not single-handedly, but a very important piece as captain as well on your 100th test. So my meter moment of the week was also the performance and spirit and character shown by Dan Biggar this weekend. Well done him against Scotland. Pains me to say it, but well done you.
That was Benji and Johnny's meter moment of the week. And meter is the world's number one wireless meat thermometer, recently making over 11 million cooks better with their game-changing app and completely wireless Bluetooth meat probe. If you've ever said your pork or turkey's dry, then meter's for you. And you can use it on a barbecue, in the oven, or in a pan. Enter a whole new world of cooking and join the meterverse at meter.com. And just use the code FrenchPod10 at checkout for 10% off any full price item as well. And from the 11th of February to the 11th of March, you can be in with a chance of winning a trip to Marcus Borden's UK barbecue school in the heart of the Devon countryside with every purchase of an ultimate bundle.
Ooh la la.
Just find the golden ticket and enjoy a day in the smoky, meaty paradise of Country Wood Smoke HQ. For more details and to be in with a chance to win, visit meter.com and look for the ultimate bundle.
Willy Wonka's golden ticket for beef. Is that what I'm hearing? Smoky paradise with the gold. I'm loving this.
The stuff that your dreams are made of, Benji.
Mate, it sounds pretty dreamy, I must say.
Should we briefly touch on the top 14 before we go as well?
No.
We'll start there then, Benji. I wasn't going to, but it was your favourite game of the season. It didn't go too well.
Mate, there's something wrong with my boys. So, no, for one, I'm not going to speak about their defeat in Brive. Rubbish game. They got melted. to be honest.
What, on the Oysters and Wine pregame or just like during the game?
No. Just they got taken on everything that I hate to admit, but they got taken on heart. And Brive have got a shit ton of that. The only good news is that there's a young, exciting 10... I think it's Miche, his last name, Gabin Miche, who looks pretty handy, pretty good, pretty hot. The also good news is that my mate Saïd Iresh announced that he was saying a brief another year, and he's a top human being. But in the end, in the derby, even if I don't think it's a derby of the Massif Central, they got melted in the end, and that's disappointing. And it's the up and down sort of performances of Clermont that are getting a bit frustrating, even though I am mega, mega excited about Champions Cup 8th of final. Clermont Tigers, that would be ideal. Home and back, that would be a perfect way for me to call it work, but also to just to have an excuse to go back to Clermont and then to go back to Leicester. So I just want them to be better than what they were last Saturday to seriously have a chance to actually, you know, causing an upset at Welford Road, because otherwise it will be a long afternoon.
We don't want to talk about Clermont too much this week, Benji, but we'll ask you about Toulon then, because you know Franck Azema very well.
Yeah.
Johnny, we spoke about it last week and you mentioned Pierre Mignoni's name. Now he's leaving Lyon, being linked to Toulon. I don't know if you've got any intel at all, Benji, but they had a big win this week against Bordeaux, but also Ebenet Sabeth is off at the end of the season, early in his contract. Carbonell's going to Montpellier. What's going on with Toulon?
Clearly something
exodus,
not great, that's for sure. I think Carbonell is a little bit different. Carbonell, has been under a lot of pressure to start. Has not been picked for the French team. Was a little bit in a dark spot with Patrice Collazo. And then Franck Azema just picked up the pieces after that. He was already pretty, how do you say that, in the rocky moment of his season. So the for him to leave is a big upset. I heard there was like a sort of a letter from the supporters of Toulon, you know, saying that it was a scandal and that his heart and his blood is Toulon and stuff, and you can't let him. It's true. He's got him leaving is Morgan Parra leaving Clermont, right? There's big symbol to it. Much more than just any other player leaving. Eden Etzebeth is a huge loss in terms of player, yes. But if he decided to leave, he decided to leave. His home is not Toulon, you know. So at least he's always got the good excuse. If Carbonell tells you, you know, I won't leave the club, that means there's a serious problem. So I just think they're not performing the way that they should be. Even against, who was it, Bordeaux?
Yeah.
They played really aggressive rugby and they were really fronting up, and which was great. And Facundo Issa is a machine, and Sergio Parisse did well. Eden Elizabeth was on the bench, was on the field, and you know, Serin and Chelsea Colby, fullback, whatever. Man, they've got some serious players. But Chelsea Colby, for instance, the day that he does half as good as what he used to with the Toulon shirt on, you call me, because at the moment he's nowhere near his level. And I'm not saying it's because of him. I'm saying it's because the whole team is not putting him in a place where he can shine like he would normally would be. For one, he's playing fullback. I'm not sure if he's a complete fullback. Toulouse actually left him on the wing, right? And they just let him do his thing from time to time, not like force him with responsibility of catching those high balls and all that. So I think it's clearly complicated. There's Franck Azema, yes, but there's also my mate Julien Dupuis who's still in there. I think if Pierre Mignoni is from Toulon, right? So he's always been he's a boy from there. So there's always a dream of getting him back. I was very surprised of seeing him leave Lyon, but I think it's maybe it was sort of his decision to say, my speech isn't really hitting the tone or hitting the heart of the boys as much as it used to, or as it should. From what I hear, Bernard Lemaitre was pretty clear to say that it's not like he's coming to replace anybody. It was more an addition to the team. Now, we all know, because we're not stupid, what this means. It means maybe that we can't get rid of anybody. And then we'll see after, oh, 3-4 weeks, it really did not work. Huh? So we had to get rid of someone, because I just don't see how it's going to fit. Fred Michalak walked up there for skills. Julien Dupuis is in there. Franck is in there. I just think it's going to be one too many. So, and I'm not even sure that's the only guy that they decided to sign. I think he mentioned there was going to be another addition in the staff. So things are changing. Things are not great.
I clearly agree. Not great. So Etzebeth leaving a contract till 2025, like upping sticks and refusing, obviously, a very well-paid contract, because clearly it's not going well. If Mignoni is the guy that's coming in to fix it, and you said you can't shift anyone around, I was going to ask, you obviously know Franck Azema very well. But Frank's been the number one at Clermont. He's currently the number one at Toulon. You mentioned other guys on the coaching staff. Could you envisage a scenario whereby Pierre Mignoni was almost a director of rugby and Frank was head coach? Would that work?
I don't think so. I don't think it would be crazy. unless Pierre decides to be. It's true that now you say that Bernard Lamet did say that he was keen on Pierre Mignoni, not just for the team, but just for the whole club. So there's an idea that he could be sort of, you know, development director of rugby in the big sense, oversee the whole sporting operations,
not on field.
Yeah, because I think Pierre Mignoni needs a bit of a breathing time, because he was saying that he was a bit suffocating at the end in Lyon. What I know about Franck is that he's a guy that is a straight shooter, that will not stay for the sake of it. He doesn't need the job. He doesn't, you know, it's not like a survival mode. He will rather leave with a clear conscience and with his head up high than anything. But he's a team player, so he's ready to be flexible for anything, as long as it's for the benefit of all and is done respectively. I know that he gets along well with Pierre Mignoni, because Pierre Mignoni was in Clermont, obviously, for a long, long time. And then Franck arrived as a backs coach. And I'm pretty sure they might even play together just briefly in Clermont, and then, you know, and just missed each other in terms of coaching. So a lot of respect, a lot of admiration on both sides, zero trouble between the two. Eden Elizabeth, the only thing I could tell you, Johnny, is that, you know how it is. It could be personal reasons. I'm not saying it is, but it could be. It's the only one where it could be. It's not like he's saying, too long shit, I'm just going to walk out. He did say he wants to go back to Safa for personal reasons, so there could be something a bit deeper in there.
And Johnny, 2-1 at the weekend, and we're talking about the trouble there to lose 5 defeats in a row. Is it just a case that they've got so many internationals, they're all away, or is there more to it?
No, it's just they've got so many people away. Even when they've had a few of them back, they haven't looked themselves. They look shaky. But when you take away Jolange, we talked about Marchand, then you take away two hookers from any team, like, you're going to struggle. You've also got Cyril Bay away, Anthony Jolange, Antoine Dupont, Ntamack. Like, you're taking away the heart and core of a team against sides that aren't losing anybody at the minute. Toulouse have got the highest representation with the French team. So it's going to be a tough period. It always is. They're the team that always gets hardest hit. But you got to think, come playoff time, they've got to be there, thereabouts, have all their big dogs back and be ready to go. But that's it. It's been a little bit worrying more. Also, just the manner with which they're playing. They just look a little bit lost, not quite with the confidence and the swagger that we've seen the past two seasons. So it'll be really interesting when Antoine Dupont, everyone gets back. But at the minute, not happy. Five games on the trot, not good for them at all.
Thanks, Johnny. Thanks, Benji. A big thanks to Billy Jackman for joining us as well. And you're off to make your annual phone call to Gregor Townsend, Johnny, with all that analysis out of round three.
Done, mate. I'm off skiing tomorrow. That's what I'm doing. I'm going down to Spain because it's the kids' holidays here and I'm not picking up my phone, not speaking to anybody. I'm just going to look after crying kids, trying to get them in ski school and trying to have a nice time for 3-4 days. So I will see you next week and chat to you then.
Good lad. Enjoy.
Thanks, guys. We'll be back next week to look ahead to Scotland, France. And thanks to all you guys for listening as well. Make sure you hit subscribe, leave us a nice review if you can as well. Check us out on Rugby Pass and on YouTube. And we'll be back next week. Au revoir, guys.
Cheers.
See you, fellas.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Winning is an everyday mindset, and we're here to help. I'm Craig Robinson. Join me and Coach John Calipari for Ways to Win. We're kicking off during March Madness. Cal's Kentucky Wildcats are in the hunt. So throughout the tournament, I'm going to call up my friend to ask about his wins, losses, and especially what he's telling his players in the locker room.
You got to win every day.
Find the Ways to Win podcast anywhere you listen.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.